Hi, I'm Barry Farber. Stay tuned for our Monday lunchtime conversation on Radio St. Pete. Hi, I'm Barry Farber, and this is In Search of the Magic Tree. What magic are we looking for? Well, if you think about a tree, several things come to mind. One, the roots, the foundation for something great. Two, the branches, representing the connection and continuation of our legacy as we pass down the values and beliefs to the next generation. And three, potential, something that starts as small as an acorn and becomes a giant oak. We're going to explore how we can build the mind, body, and spirits of our children, how to raise our kids with key traits like patience, positive attitudes, courage, empathy, determination, and more. Join me on this adventure as we talk to celebrities, athletes, entertainers, business leaders, educators, brain surgeons, and more about the magic to building success at an early age. Today we have a very special guest, somebody I'm very excited to talk to, because if there's anybody to give advice on how to raise kids to understand the value of money, it's Mr. Wonderful. Yep, Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Shark Tank, and the international best-selling author of several books, including Cold Hard Truth on Family, Kids, and Money. We have Kevin O'Leary. Thanks, Kevin, for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
My feeling is all kids are diamonds in the rough. Here they are. They're born. And it's a lot more nurture than nature that I believe forms your kids to be what they are. And I wanted to know your take on how do you teach them work ethic? I know you teach them at maybe 4 or 5 years of age, but what are some of the key things about teaching young kids about work ethic?
You know, it's important within a family because, you know, you think about the basic union of a family, why it was established, you know, thousands of years ago, is to form an economic pillar that can sustain the family. That's nobody wants to talk about it, but the bottom line is you can't be successful in our society unless you've figured out a way to support each other. And so in the agrarian societies, we had lots of children so that they could help out on the farm and grow food and distribute it to other family members that were aged. And all of that happened with the idea that there was an ethic of work, that some portion of the day you performed a task that sustained the family. And it's no different today. So the idea that I tried, and hopefully I was successful, it seems that I was, is to explain kids at the age of 4 and 5 that time, when you spend time working on something, there's a reward for it. There's an economic reward for it. You get paid for it. And that money is yours, and you do what you wish with it. But you can't live without it. Money is a family member. It sits at the table every day with you. And remarkably, in our society, 50% of unions that break up and divorce, and when I wrote my first book, I did a lot of research on this. Within 5 to 7 years, when a union breaks up, it's not infidelity. It's financial pressure. The reason marriages fall apart is one partner outspends the other, and they break the union of money as a family member because they turn it into an enemy. They're in debt. And so the whole idea with kids is to get in their universe the idea that some portion of the day you're doing something that has an economic reward. And that's what I've used, and that's what's been successful.
And how young did you start with your own kids, Kevin?
3 years old, by reading to them stories about, you know, there's lots of great kids' books that talk about the ethic of family and work. And so you have to go find those and, you know, or convert them yourself. But my wife did a lot of the reading because I was traveling so much, but we both were on the same, you know, team about this. It was always about getting the kids to get involved in whatever those tasks were, particularly when they were growing up in Boston, where we have, you know, the traditional, I'll give you an example. Right at the beginning of the first winter, when they were old enough to start shoveling snow, that was their job. And so it would take them a long time, and they'd have to do the front and back steps. And they just got into that mode. After it snowed, they knew what they were going to do, and they got paid for it. And it wasn't a question about it. They always did it. And I think that was very important. And it certainly, you know, worked out that for both of them. They understood at a young age saving money and buying things with it and not wasting it. And my grandparent, you know, my parents would always support that idea of doing something and rewarding them for it. I think it's culture. It's family culture.
Now, that's great advice. I love it. And I'd love to focus on this question. You know, In Search of the Magic Tree, which this podcast is kind of for the parents and teachers of the children's story, The Adventures of Little Billy in Search of the Magic Tree, there's an owl, Lawrence the Owl, and he talks about patience. You know, Little Billy has to have patience to find the magic secret, and you try to teach your kids patience. What is the secret to teaching your kids about patience?
Yeah, you know, the not everything works. And I've tried to tell my kids as they, you know, got older. And a good example, my son, you know, I play guitar. I have a large guitar collection. And guitar is not something that's easy to do or learn quickly. You just can't. There's nothing you can do to accelerate the time it takes to learn the chords, to develop a style, to learn how to play lead or rhythm. And I explained to him at an early age, the only way you're going to become a player is you're going to have to set aside some portion of every day to practice. And it's a great analogy for a work ethic, but also the patience, because in guitar, you can't play it unless you get calluses on your fingertips, on your playing hand. Otherwise, and the only way you get the callus is the practice. And by maintaining your practice and playing every day, you maintain the callus. It's a fantastic way of understanding life. So any instrument, by the way, violin, any string instrument, bass, is a good example of patience. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can pay for that can accelerate the patience. Not a thing you can do. And if you want to become a player, you're going to have to practice. He learned that, and now he's better than I am.
Yes, I'm a believer in having kids play an instrument. All my three kids played a guitar, piano, drum. They each played an instrument, and I learned how critical it was to be patient when you're learning the fundamentals of the basics. And fundamentals isn't always fun. I remember somebody who owned a violin shop. He was an engineer at AT&T and just had a passion for violins. So instead of retiring, he did that. And he goes, Barry, you want to learn the violin? Let me tell you something you should do for the next 30 days. And every morning, 10 minutes, every afternoon, 10 minutes, that's it. Just do that and don't talk to me about playing any kind of notes. He said, take the bow and put it a millimeter away from the string. Don't touch the string. Go back and forth in the movement of playing that string without touching it and do that over and over. He was teaching and talking about physiological memory that we need to learn at an early stage to get the fundamentals right. So the tonation, once you play the note after that training, the tonation sounds great. And it's not always easy. You get frustrated. Kids get frustrated when they're trying to be patient and learn something. How do you teach your kids about attitude, about a positive, resilient attitude and dealing with people and all the things that come about when they deal with obstacles? What do you do? What do you teach about attitude?
I've always thought the best way to do that is at an early age, start to explain to them that people they're going to meet, whether it's at school or, you know, when they're with you or when they're on their own, are all different. They're not the same. And just because they're different, I don't mean ethically, I mean personality wise. Everybody has a different way of just communicating. And just because they're not like you doesn't mean they're bad or good. It's they're different. And the whole idea of tolerance around different ideas, whether you like someone or you don't like them, but you have to work with them or you have to, you know, cooperate with them to get something done, is an idea of flexibility, of understanding that not everybody is the same and they never will be. And what makes you successful in life is finding the path of least resistance. In any endeavor, you're trying to find the path of least resistance. And if you can't cooperatively work with people, tolerate them, you will spend a lot of your energy in your life not getting as far as someone who understands the concept of a more frictionless path of least resistance. This is a concept that's worked very well for me as I teach in college now with entrepreneurs. The path of least resistance is the one where you're cooperating with people, even if you don't like them. And it's great leaders understand that. And individuals that are successful in life are always finding the path of least resistance.
So I'm thinking of my own kids and raising them at a young age, and there's always that conflict between being a parent and being strict and not being liked because you're going to do something that maybe is discipline and hopefully will pay off in the future, but it's frustrating because you want to be their friend also, that parent versus friend. And I think it's just such a critical time that our parenting is a huge responsibility, and you need to share your values at an early age so they understand work ethic, attitude, courage, empathy, all the critical things that you want to share when they're young. What do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, parenting itself, the infrastructure of parenting is when you decide to have children, whether you adopt them, whether you have them biologically, you're taking on an immense responsibility to give them your values so that, and that doesn't mean that they don't pursue different, you know, opportunities in life, but the core of values that failed parents did not pass on values. They didn't spend enough time making sure that they gave the fundamental building blocks to their children that made their own lives work. That if you can afford a family, you've done something right, because a family is basically a business unit. That's what it is. And if you're having children you can't afford, that's a different topic of discussion, because you're just giving them a very hard burden in life. But parenting is really about making sure that they have a moral compass, they understand what the family values are about, they know how to work with other people. And it's a full-time job for one or both of you. And this is very controversial. I've got myself in lots of trouble about it. You know, when people say to me, well, do you think it's okay that both parents work? And my answer is no, not until you have passed on a fundamental, you know, set of values to your children. That usually happens between the ages of 7 and 9 years old. So that means one parent should stay at home for that 7 to 9 year period. And, you know, it may sound like a bad idea, but it's not, because when you hire someone else that is not your family to raise your children, that's when problems start. They don't have the same motivation. They have a 9 to 5, you're paying them to babysit them. They're not teaching them anything. And it's a brutal conversation, but if you're going to become a parent and you're listening to this, you should, one of you, doesn't matter which one, you should commit 7 to 9 years full time in parenting. That's the deal. And not go work somewhere else. Just figure that out. Now, look, you know, not everybody agrees with me. I don't care. This is the way I look at it. That's how we did it. And I owe my wife, you know, a forever gratitude for doing that with both of our children. She gave up her career, but now we enjoy wonderful children that have jobs, that have what we think are the fundamentals to become successful in life. And when we support them every way we can. And so I think, you know, for me, that's the deal.
I love that, Kevin. I think that's so important. The time that you spend at an early age with your kids, whether the father, the mother, whoever does it, it's so critical to really share those values and make them stick. I want to talk to you now about courage. I want to talk to you about risk taking and the courage and not being afraid to fall or fail. How do you teach kids about courage?
Yeah, I did it a little differently. I talked about understanding failure. It's important to know that you will do things that won't work and you will fail. But that should be a lesson. The whole idea, what happens over, my way of explaining this to kids was, look, when you're young as you are, you're missing something called experience. And what makes you more effective and successful in life is learning from mistakes. And so actually what experience is a whole series of mistakes you made that you learned from, that you, because you made those mistakes, you don't do them again because you have the experience of what not to do that didn't work. And so experience is worth gold. Experience is invaluable. It's precious. But the only way you get it is by trying things that will not always work. So it's okay to fail, because on the other side of the balance, you're getting the invaluable gold of experience. That's how you sell it.
Kevin, I love the dedication to your wife, Linda, and it's all about family. And, you know, thinking about how you write a book with that much content, that much rich content, what was that like? What was the work ethic involved in getting that accomplished?
Going through that whole thing, I don't want to say something about writing that book, because I thought it was going to be easy to do. It wasn't. It took me 2 years, because I really wanted to write it from experience and on the things I learned with my wife and raising our family. And I did work with editors and ghostwriters after, you know, I'd sit down at night and write from 11 till maybe 1:30 in the morning, and I'd try and pound out a chapter. And I would go to bed thinking it was great. And then I'd send it to my editors and they'd say, "This is total crap. You got to start again." And it's really, you know, and I try and explain what I was trying to bring into that chapter. But that whole catharsis is the first one was so hard. It took so long. It was a monster hit. I mean, it was number one, and it's still selling today because it's a fundamental pouring of truth, at least my truth, about how it works. And I'm glad I did it. And the next two were easier. But, you know, I've tried to build a series of lessons about life for anybody to read. It doesn't mean you live by the creed of this book. It just gives you some ideas about what you should and shouldn't do based on experience and the things I've learned and all the research I did about marriage in the first book, and all the lawyers I talked to and divorce lawyers. And it really, I learned a lot. And I think it's a good read.
Kevin, I'm reading your book now, and I just love the part where you, instead of telling your kids about a bedtime story or reading them a book, you're actually talking to them about banks and how the banks, you know, take your money and what they do. And I just think that's amazing. You know, one of my kids, Sam, has been a big fan of yours for years, watching you on Shark Tank. And all my kids asked me this question. He goes, what was it like raising kids and traveling as much as you did when they were young? Was there anything that you were able to teach them or take from those journeys and that travel experience that you shared with your kids at an early age?
Yeah, what I learned growing up in all these countries, because every 2 years, my dad worked with the ILO, it's part of the United Nations, so we'd move every 24 months, so Cyprus, Cambodia, Tunisia, Ethiopia, Germany, France, Switzerland, that it gives you a lot of tolerance for culture. You learn that people are not the same. They believe in different things. They run their lives differently, and you have to respect that. I remember living in Addis Ababa, capital of Ethiopia. I met Haile Selassie when he was alive. I met Pol Pot in Cambodia when Sihanouk was king there. I mean, those cultures gave me a real respect for how the world works. And it's made me a much better investor because I understand that I'm willing to go invest in real estate in Cambodia because when I was there, it had just come off being a French colony. So I learned how to cook there. I became a chef, French fusion cooking. So all of these experiences were great for me as a young person. And so what I've been doing with my family, I'm very fortunate to be able to say to them, look, you know, where would you like to go this weekend? Let's get together as a family, pick anywhere on earth, and I'll take you there. And so we've been revisiting these places. We've gone back to Cambodia, back to Thailand, back to Switzerland, back to France. And as a family now, I can show them where I grew up. And I think it was a great experience for them and certainly for me. And I consider myself, you know, a global investor. I'm a citizen of Ireland, of Canada, and recently just got my Emirati citizenship for the United Arab Emirates. So, you know, because I invest in all these countries and I do business there and I want to be part of their culture and I want to show respect by earning my citizenship. So for me, it's really a journey and I'm passing it to my kids while I can. So, and I really enjoy doing it.
Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, thank you so much for coming on the program today. Anybody out there really want to extend the benefits of this program to some additional knowledge, pick up his copy of Cold Hard Truth on Men, Women, and Money. Also, that relates a lot to this show, Cold Hard Truth on Family, Kids, and Money. And you can go to kevinoleary.com to see more of what he's doing. And obviously, you'll see him on Shark Tank. But just turn on your TV. He'll show up every time. Kevin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the program and sharing your words of wisdom. Really great to have you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
This is Barry Farber. I hope you will join me again next Monday afternoon at 12:20 Eastern Time for In Search of the Magic Tree here on Sunshine 96.7 FM and Radio St. Pete Online.